Selfies with Santa or streaming the Queen's speech. Phones are a big part of Christmas. So at Tesco Mobile, we've got loads of big savings. Like saving £72 on the Samsung Galaxy S8 and S8 Plus from just £25.49 a month. Hurry, offer ends 18th of November. However you do Christmas, everyone's welcome at Tesco Mobile.
Based on 36-month credit agreement, 0% APR with Tesco Mobile Limited, 24-month usage agreement. Subject to status, fair use policy applies. See tescomobile.com/terms.
The following is brought to you by the Leave It in the Ring Podcast Network. All boxing, no filter.
Greetings and welcome to the Boxing Esquire Podcast. Welcome to another edition of the Boxing Esquire Podcast. My guest on this episode is the president of Showtime Sports and Event Programming, Mr. Steven Espinoza. With the demise of HBO Boxing, Steven is now arguably the most powerful man in the sport, certainly the most powerful man administering the sport for a network. I spoke to him about the great 2018 Showtime has had, what's ahead for 2019, how the PBC's deal with Fox affects Showtime, and some of the bigger events coming up on Showtime pay-per-view, including Wilder Fury and Pacquiao Broner. I also spoke to Steven about the fact that he is the lone TV executive actively curating boxing on a network, and as someone who's publicly advocated on behalf of the sport to the media, just wanted to know if he considers himself maybe the conscience of the sport. It was a great conversation. Hope you enjoy. So I want to welcome maybe the most powerful man in the sport, at least certainly the most interesting to me. That's Steven Espinoza. Welcome to the Boxing Esquire Podcast.
Pleasure. I'm probably the most powerful man that speaks to the media, at least, right? We'll qualify it, right?
Absolutely. 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 So, I just wanted to, 2018 has been a banner year for Showtime, from the upfront in January, which was amazing, to Fight of the Year candidates, Laura Hurd, Wilder Ortiz, title unifications. Tell me how successful a year Showtime's had, and has it met your expectations?
It really has. I mean, it's sort of been a 3 or 4 year process, because I started here almost 7 years ago, and at that point, we were working on guys who were really relatively unknown. The Charlos, Thurman. Charlos have never appeared anywhere other than Showtime. Thurman might have had one appearance somewhere else, but it certainly wasn't a name. So, in some senses, I think 17 and 18 we've been really, really happy with. But the groundwork for those types of years, goes back 2 or 3 years. And you sort of have to endure some of the slings and arrows as you sort of go up and build these guys, and not everyone's going to be a monster. But after sort of grinding away, we reached a point where this generation, this wave of talent, all sort of matured at the same time. Certainly the welterweight class sort of all came together at the same time. And a good class of 54 and, the 60s, as a group, not just at Showtime, sort of coalesced around the same time. So it's great when you set a plan and it actually comes true. We set a plan to sort of highlight 147, 126. Ultimately, a little bit later, we set our sights on the heavyweights. And you've got a lot of grand ideas of, this is how this piece fits, and then we'll do this guy and this guy. Not every time does it work out exactly, but I've got to say, I think we'll be able to see unifications in 126 and 147 and several other divisions in 2019, and that's sort of what everyone has wanted.
Absolutely. Wow, that's great. I was going to get to 2019. I know you're already planning for it. Just want to know, is there going to be another upfront like Showtime had last year? And I see, Fox kind of decided to do it as well. But, I mean, a couple of fights have been leaked, but I mean, is it going to be similar to last year's where you're going to go all the way into June with the schedule, or is it it's comparable? Or
Yeah, I mean, clearly we can't claim that we originated up fronts, but sort of, you know, rolling out the boxing schedule as we did for boxing, I thought, you know, that was something we were proud of, and it really was like herding cats. It was, you know, in retrospect, you know, as soon as we announced, we figured, okay, you announced 6 months of fights, like half of them are not going to stick just because things happen. And virtually all of them, you're stuck on their original dates with the original opponent, which I never would have guessed happened. I mean, this year, the market has changed a little bit. You know, in some sense, we are, you know, collaborating in a sense with Fox. I know we'll get to that later, but we're splitting some of the fighters with Fox. So it's, you know, whether we can get to the point in the near future, meaning December, January, where we can say, you know, here's our schedule for 6 months, you know, since we're splitting with Fox, I'm not sure it'll be quite as impactful because there's going to be some Fox fights. For example, you know, I've got some plans for, you know, we've got a plan for Charlo Hurd, you know, hopefully in the first half of next year, you know, but Charlo's got, you know, a fight that he's got to get through on the 22nd. So, right. You know, it's one thing to talk about that. I'd love to see this magic theoretically. It's another thing to sort of, you know, present it in an upfront, you know, and that's an awkward thing when you've got guys who still need to win fights to get there.
Well, that's great. I'm sure, you know, boxing fans will be over the moon to hear, you know, unifications in three divisions. But you know, clearly PBC is, you know, I mean, I do my own ratings, and I look at the transnational boxing ratings. I think like 41 fighters are either champions or contenders from the PBC. In my top 25, I think it's like 75 fighters. They're the monster. Mm-hmm. So clearly, you know, fitting all of that on one network and having everybody fight 2-3 times a year, that just, you know, wasn't going to work. Mm-hmm. They're on Fox. You know, they're in front of hundreds of millions. That's great. But, you know, as you alluded to, you know, how is it, you know, how does the Fox deal affect Showtime? And for me, I mean, just seeing all those welterweights in their rollout, I was surprised because I'm like, Showtime has developed those guys, and especially Spence. I'm like, whoa. So yeah, how is it going to work, and how does it affect Showtime?
Well, I think you identified the key issue is there's a lot of talent, and there's, you know, an even a deeper level of talent that, you know, not all of us have really discovered yet. And, you know, I'm anxious to get to those guys. And just the way, you know, when Floyd retired after the Berto fight, it sort of opened up some bandwidth to start, you know, speculating who's the next guy, and opens up. Like, I think what Fox will do is open up some bandwidth, and we can sort of expand little deeper on some guys that we haven't seen as well. But I do think there's more than enough talent to go around and more than enough fights to go around. You know, Charlo's are a good example. You know, they wanted to get in a fight before the holidays. You know, it's a sort of an awkward date for us and a bad time of the year budget-wise. Sure. But, you know, made complete sense for Fox. Now, I am confident the fights that we've been building to, for example, you know, Charlo Hurd, will end up with us because I think there's a recognition on the PBC side that, again, Charlo's haven't fought anywhere other than here. You know, same with Hurd, and you know we've built that. So I think we're going to continue to sort of reap the benefits of what we've sown in that regard, and I think Fox is going to certainly have their share of good fights. But for us, the outlook doesn't really change. We believe we've established ourselves as sort of the premium destination, you know, the go-to network for the most consistent selection of top-tier fights, the most meaningful, most important fights. And we think that's going to continue. You know, we are confident that we will continue to be, you know, the premium home of fights, the home of premium fights, you know, the best and the biggest fights. I think the vast majority of them will be here on Showtime, and we'll continue to occupy that space in the market.
Also, I mean, you know, with Fox having, you know, such coverage and available to so many people, you think that possibly guys appearing on Fox, coming back to Showtime, maybe Showtime gets a little bounce from that.
You know, we went through this process before in 2014, and I think, thankfully, writers and other sort of commentators have been a little bit more restrained. You know, back in 2014 when PBC rolled out, it was, you know, it was heralded as sort of the end of Showtime. Oh, goes there goes all the Showtime guys. PBC has pulled the rug out. Like, Showtime Boxing is dead. And at the time, you know, we said, hey, you know, slow down. Like, there's a bigger plan in play. You know, this isn't done without consultation, without our involvement, and we'll get them back. And, you know, we think in the long run, it'll be the rising tide that lifts all boats. And that's the way it played out. So, look, I'm glad to have Fox, you know, in here, and they serve an important place in the market in terms of providing more dates and providing a broad platform, which, you know, you go back and really over the last 20, 30 years, you know, every major boxing superstar has been built with the help of network television. You know, arguably, Floyd is probably the one guy who is the exception to that. But, you know, De La Hoya, even Tyson, you know, Roy Jones, obviously Sugar Ray, and all through network television. So the fact that there's a network participant now, I think, is a good thing for the sport. And I think we'll still be able to occupy the premium tier in terms of having the best of the best.
That's great. That's great. Now, you know, CBS, the parent company, has gone, you know, undergone, you know, a big change with Les Moonves, who was a massive boxing fan, going. And of course, you know, your competitors have seized on this. And you've got Arum and Hearn out there saying, oh, well, Showtime's going to be just like HBO without Les there. You know, they're going to be out of the boxing business and you know, in short order. I mean, is it obviously, you know, you've talked about the growth that Showtime, you know, has experienced with boxing and how it fits. But, I mean, has anyone from CBS Sports spoken to you about the continued commitment to Showtime boxing? Or, I mean, are you just... is not even necessary.
Well, you know, it's always, you know, it's always necessary because we want to coordinate with other aspects of the company and make sure we're all pulling the same direction. We all agree on the strategy because for a pay-per-view like the Wilder or like Pacquiao, you know, we need CBS's help. Like, they support us in really critical ways. So I know that couldn't get done without continuing support. But we're coming off a year in 2018 where our ratings were the highest they've been in the last 5 years. You know, so there's, I mean, whether it's Arum saying it or Hearn, it's absolutely asinine to say. And I think the more they repeat it, the sillier they look. You know, Arum, you know, sort of used to that. Whatever outlets he's not working with, he'll consistently trash. And then when he needs to work with them, then he'll speak positively. So right now, he's exclusively with ESPN, so he trashes everyone else. That's his MO. It's a playbook that apparently Eddie Hearn has decided to copy from. And even though Eddie, you know, has zero experience in the U.S. pay-per-view market, and relatively little experience promoting at all in the U.S. market, you know, he's gone out on the same limb to say that we'll be out of business within the next 12 months. You know, I looking at Eddie's business and ours, I think he should spend a little more time, you know, tending to his own business here, because I think there have been some pretty significant changes which have affected him. And, you know, I wouldn't, if I were in his shoes, I wouldn't be completely satisfied with the performance of my own business. I wouldn't be speculating about the end of other people's businesses. But the reality is Showtime Boxing has never been stronger. You know, our the talent we've developed has you know, matured, you know, completely to have a new wave of stars. And, you know, we're as excited as we've ever been about the sport. And it is true that that Leslie is a big boxing fan, but there are many other big boxing fans. And I think sort of attributing it to Leslie's fandom, it does a disservice to the sport itself. The reality, you know, I believe we have, in some senses, paved a way for this new wave of boxing participants. I think if we hadn't have put such a good face on the sport over the last 2 or 3 years, I don't think there are major investors and hedge funds and networks coming into the sport. I think largely, you know, we've been the engine behind the sport. And when people look at the opportunity, I think they're looking largely at what we've done in the sport the last couple of years. And it's great for the sport. I'm happy, but we're not going anywhere.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. There was a lot to unpack with that answer. I mean, without question, I think, you know, I mean, there's been an explosion of, you know, money coming into the sport. There's never been so much money. And I do want to get to that, but I'm going to get.
Yeah. And, you know, and one of the interesting aspects, I mean, to sort of say, well, you know, the CEO has changed, so we'll know it hasn't support. That sort of suggests that the sport is just here as a favor because there's a personal
feature,
fandom. Yeah. It's sort of like, oh, I like this, so I'm doing it. It really demeans the sport. So to say, well, without him there, you know, the sport's going to die. It means, well, the sport's not worth anything. So if there's not one guy who likes it there in the CEO position, then there's no reason to do it. You know, that, again, further from the truth. Our experience is the polar opposite of HBO's, at least from what I read. It drives our business. Our subscribers respond positively. They're responding by watching. We've got, you know, an upward trend on ratings. So this doesn't need a patron, to use your words. This sport makes sense on its own merits, you know, and that is something that has been proven time and time again here for us in our business.
Right, right. Yeah, and that was a point you made in the upfront last year, which, again, I can't say enough about, was, you know, just the information and the education you gave people about the interest in the sport and what kind of sleeping giant it is.
Yeah, maybe I shouldn't have, and I wouldn't have to deal with all these competitors. I should have kept it a secret that the business actually works, right?
Well, you know what? Listen, anyone looking out for the greater good of the sport, I mean, you know, you can't knock that, and you can't knock that instinct either. Just wanted to get to a couple of fights that you have coming up that are pretty exciting. Obviously, Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury, December 1st. Showtime's first pay-per-view in a while. Mm-hmm. You know, people are calling it the biggest heavyweight fight in the U.S. since Lewis Tyson. It's also really one that's kind of hard to call. A lot of question marks going in. You know, is Fury's readiness? I mean, is he ready after two tune-ups, after the long layoff and his troubles? And, you know, how is Wilder going to deal with Fury's style and how unorthodox he is? You know, I think it's a fight the public's getting excited about. I mean, how have you seen the promotion going so far?
You know, this is the sort of nervous period for us because you're 3 weeks out. The marketing hasn't hit yet. The marketing starts the last 2 weeks. So,
although honestly, the social media stuff has been awesome. It's really been good.
And that's something that I think is one of our strengths, in particular. Our head of digital, Brian Daly, Sports Digital, and his team are phenomenal. And I think you're obviously paying attention. But it sort of, you know, makes you a little nervous because you're sort of like, it's almost here. I want to start seeing commercials on TV every day. But I think overall, it has been building the way we had hoped. And I think the thing that speaks best about it, if you look at Deontay and his training, like, he's always in phenomenal shape. Like, the guy never has an ounce of fat on him. But where Tyson Fury has come in terms of his fitness, like, the photos that he's been posting lately, they're a different guy. Not just a different guy from where he was back at the start of 2018, a different guy than we saw fight in August,
right?
In, like, physically. So I think what that says is both of these guys recognize what a challenge they have in front of them. And, you know, last I checked a couple of days ago, Wilder is, you know, I think minus 140, and I think Fury is plus 160. That's about as close as you can get a fight. And I think that's accurate. It's that classic matchup of two contrasting styles. And if it's a boxing match, then it might be a long night for Deontay. You know, it turns into a brawl, then, you know, Fury is probably not going to last the 12 rounds. It's sort of, it's an interesting clash of styles. And I don't think anybody can reliably say how the fight's going to go.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Very exciting fight. And then I guess we'll get to what's going on in January, where you've got, Manny Pacquiao returning to Showtime in a really interesting fight. I mean, with Adrian Broner, I think just as looking at it, no matter, what medium it's coming through, that's an interesting fight. That's just a really interesting fight. I mean, there's been a little bit of criticism on social media. I think maybe just because it's back-to-back and back-to-back months, pay-per-views. Right. Some are questioning, Showtime's supposed to have a bigger budget for 2019. Why are they putting two pay-per-views back-to-back? Mm-hmm. You've stated in the past that pay-per-views don't accrue to the business, and keeping fights on Showtime and off pay-per-view drives business and subscriptions more. But, in terms of strategy, just balancing what goes on pay-per-view and what goes on Showtime Championship Box, where do you draw the line? Just kind of like, regarding like expected buy rates or deciding what goes on pay-per-view and what stays on the network?
It's a really good question. I think the first criteria is it's got to be an extra premium. It's got to be a premium product, because I think that's where you start to get the most pushback from fans is, don't sell me ground beef at filet mignon prices. So it needs to be something special. Heavyweight championship of the world, two of the top three in the world. Okay. People will, there are always some portion that'll complain, but that's a premium product. Manny Pacquiao is a premium product, at this stage. And I think that's a really interesting, matchup as well. So I think that's where you start. And that's really where has filtered out probably 80-90% of what we've done over the last. I mean, the Wilder fight will be our first pay-per-view. We haven't done any pay-per-views we've done one pay-per-view in the last 3 years, which was Mayweather-McGregor, which again, unique. Yeah, unique, premium. Well, yeah, that was sort of, so it's sort of, if we look at it that way, I mean, I think where there's the biggest problem is when you are trying to sell something at a premium price that is perceived as not premium. The obvious example, and not picking him because he's a fantastic fighter, but Crawford Postol, doing under 100,000 buys, shows that it shouldn't have been a pay-per-view.
Right.
But having said, they're two phenomenal fighters. And you look back at, the matchup and the quality of the matchup doesn't always go. Because if you look at Kovalev Ward, which, for a variety of different reasons, didn't perform as well as most expected.
Right.
Phenomenal matchup to really talented.
Especially the rematch really surprised me, because the first fight was awesome. You had knockdown, you had Ward coming from behind, it was controversial.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's, and I don't want to, point fingers, but I want to be candid. I think there's an art and the science to pay-per-view marketing and promotion. And I think you need two willing participants. You need, you need a good pay-per-view distribution partner, and you need people to understand the market. I know Roc Nation was relatively new to the sport, new to pay-per-views. That could have been part of it. I know, Kovalev isn't particularly, he's an interesting fighter in the ring. He's not exactly a marketer's dream.
Not Conor McGregor.
Right, exactly, in terms of, giving material.
Right.
He's more the strong, silent type. And Andre is, again, top pound for pound probably at the time, but he's a somewhat understated guy. So all of that goes into the factors. And look, the Pacquiao thing was sort of happenstance. That wasn't, I mean, who knows whether we, you know, whether we would have gotten him later in the year. It wasn't something that we really saw coming. It sort of just, the opportunity popped up. He said he wanted to fight in January, and he knows all the business risks coming out of the holidays, another pay-per-view. And look, I give at a certain level, you know, it's the ultimate in sort of, you know, capitalism and entrepreneurship. I mean, here is when a fighter makes a decision, and I mean, when a fighter makes the decision to go pay-per-view, you know, not a promoter saying, well, the network doesn't have money, I don't want to pay for it, so I'm putting it on a pay-per-view. That's not being an entrepreneur. That's being, unfortunately, the victim of, you know, bad promotion.
Right.
But when, you know, a Mikey Garcia and Errol Spence say, it's time for us to test the waters and see, you know, if this is how the audience responds, you know, I understand the cost thing, and financials are certainly a barrier for a portion of the market. But for those fighters, they're eating what they kill. It's right. Sort of like, if it doesn't do well, they don't get as much.
Right.
If it does well, they get as much. So it is, they're truly betting on themselves. So, you know, at that point, I think any fighter who decides to go that way deserves credit. It's a risk. It's a lot more work, and you're betting on yourself.
Absolutely. Well, how about the risk to Showtime? Like, if let's say these pay-per-views maybe underperform, especially if Showtime's putting up a guarantee. Mm-hmm. I mean, does that affect the budget or the quality of fights on the network, like, going forward for that year?
To some extent, but you know, the reality, it's not quite as simple as you know, we're not always a standalone business unit. So it's sort of like, okay, it would have been great if, you know, we took the Mayweather McGregor money and plowed it back into boxing.
Right.
Okay, well, you know, that's great. There's also other things that need to be paid for it at the network. But by the same token, if I'm going to say plow it back into boxing when we make money, then to your question, if it doesn't make money, then I'll slash the budget for the next half of the year. So it's not quite that bad. I mean, look, it has, you know, some impact if a pay-per-view really underperforms, although part of my job is to structure deals in a way that the network doesn't get hurt, that we have an upside without hopefully too much downside. And, you know, in success, the whole network benefits. You know, there's more money for everybody. So I think that's, you know, it's tempting to sort of say, look, you know, I'm an island. I want to be an island in success. But, you know, we're a business unit. There's a lot of different departments across the network that contribute to the success. So it's sort of like, okay, we each get to eat when the pay-per-view performs.
Sure.
Well, I guess with the winner of Pacquiao Broner, whether it's Pacquiao or Broner, do they, you know, is there kind of an expectation that the winner of that fight fights Floyd Mayweather, and I would assume Cinco de Mayo pay-per-view?
You know, that's one of the great things. I mean, I think you know, Floyd's got his finger in a lot of different pies. You know, whether it's, you know, Khabib and UFC,
right.
Whether it's Manny Pacquiao, whether it's, you know, staying retired and having a great travel schedule.
Right, and having a great Instagram account.
Right, and investing in real estate and all kinds of stuff. But, so, look, that is a very real possibility, but if for whatever reason that doesn't come through, like Pacquiao versus the winner of Garcia Spence, or Pacquiao versus Thurman, or Pacquiao versus Danny Garcia, or Pacquiao versus, you know, the winner of Porter Ugas. That's the great thing, is that Pacquiao fits in with the welterweights, you know, exactly perfectly. He's the one piece. And the best thing I can say is that he's still willing to take on top tier talent. I think that was a question, because if you look at the recent opponents, it hasn't been a murderer's row,
right,
for the most part. So I think you look at it and say, well, is that a Pacquiao choice or is that, you know, is he a victim of circumstance? And I think from what I know so far, it's largely circumstance because he has indicated he is absolutely willing to take on all those guys. So if he was in, you know, if some of those guys were in the top ranked stable, then I think we would have seen him. But I think other than the Mayweather fight, Top Rank wanted to keep it within their stable. And therefore, I think ultimately when Manny got his freedom, one of the key things he wanted to do was go somewhere where he had access to a bunch of top-tier names.
That's right, yeah. I mean, if PBC has anything, they've got welterweights. And they've got welterweights kind of at all tiers, you know, young guys, older guys, top guys.
Right.
Lighter guys who want to be welterweights, yep. who could you can make money with. Mm-hmm. So he came to the right place. So that's interesting. Mm-hmm. So it's not just he's coming back for Mayweather and that's it.
No, and, you know, and look, I think we can't necessarily assume that Pacquiao wins that. I mean, I think you know, I know, you know, Broner's coming off, you know, two fights where he didn't come out. You know, on the winning end of things, but there's no denying his athletic talent and you know his skill, and that's what's fascinating to me about the matchup. I mean, you've got two of the most athletically gifted fighters in the modern generation. So I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that that Manny wins that fight.
Absolutely. I mean, listen, I worked with Kevin Cunningham, with Corey Spinks for a few years, and if anyone's going to whip Broner into shape and get him ready for Pacquiao, it's Kevin Cunningham.
Yeah, he's a no-nonsense guy. He doesn't tolerate a lot. Yeah.
He's a great guy. I guess talk a little bit about the one that got away, Joshua Wilder, this year. I guess now that, you know, Eddie has firmly committed to DAZN and seems to have committed Joshua to DAZN, and they're kind of the anti pay-per-view model. I mean, how does that set up now? I mean, it seems like Eddie's probably determined to put at least a first fight between Wilder and Joshua on DAZN. Now, I guess there's many variables here, but, you know, should Wilder win, would that kind of throw the ball back in Showtime's court to do a pay-per-view in the U.S.?
Well, it's funny. As usual, it's hard to tell exactly what Eddie Hearn is saying. Because sometimes he says pay-per-view market is dead, but of course that doesn't mean the UK because that's his lifeblood, and he wouldn't have a boxing program in the UK without pay-per-view. And then he also says, well, for the big fights, you know, we're not limiting a guy like Joshua to DAZN, and for a big fight, conceivably he could. So it's I don't know how to decipher any of that. I'm not sure that AJ does either, and whether AJ is in fact signed to DAZN because he's with, you know, de facto signed to DAZN because he's with Eddie Hearn, or whether Eddie actually meant it when he said, "Look, if there's a bigger pay-per-view opportunity outside of DAZN, then he will explore that." But I think what is puzzling to me is that, you know, as a promoter and as a promoter for a fighter, I think one of the guiding principles, not always, but one of the guiding principles is maximizing revenues.
Right.
And in terms of maximizing the revenues for Wilder Joshua, or maximizing the revenues for Joshua in particular, we know that the Wilder offer would have done both of those things. And he didn't go that way. And, you know, going forward, you know, we know that, you know, in terms of Joshua's long term, putting him on DAZN in the U.S. at this critical point in his career is certainly not maximizing his career arc, not at this stage with the limited visibility and the limited awareness of DAZN in the U.S. You know, if I were me, I would have used one of the networks or a couple of the networks for another year or two to build up Joshua in the U.S. And then at that point, but, you know, so you've got to sort of question what is the goal there for Eddie Hearn in terms of his fighters. Is it getting them the biggest fights and maximizing their revenues, or is it building the DAZN business? And that's what I think is the shame about the business. I do not, you know, doubt the trends of going to streaming. That's why we started streaming everything, you know, back in 2015. So, like, you're preaching to the choir in terms of needing to be visible and streaming. But when I see these fighters, yes, most of them are getting good money. But every dollar today is not a good dollar. So you get paid well, and you fall off the map in terms of visibility and awareness. And then, you know, three fights later, your career is three steps back, and you've got something in your bank account, but nobody knows who you are, and nobody wants to fight you because you bring no value to the table. Right. So the reality there is, you know, I think it's a real shame. It's a real shame that fighters' careers are being sacrificed to build a business for DAZN.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's what is happening. Right now, anybody who's appearing on DAZN is disappearing for visibility. I mean, that's why they haven't released any reliable viewership numbers, you know, nor will they ever. Because, you know, the reality is right now. Now you say, okay, they're getting big checks. Well, that's great. But then what happens with all these guys who have three fight deals and they've disappeared for the last three fights and, you know, 5 or 10,000 people have seen them on the service and maybe 2,000 people in the arena, and they're not being marketed and promoted. You know, DAZN business might be great, but these guys will be left behind. So I think it's a real shame that, you know, that again, that business is being built on the backs of these guys' careers, right, without sort of a reciprocal value being given.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, it's, you know, if I had told you when you took this job that by the end of 2018, HBO's out of business, I mean, that would have been a pretty huge victory for Showtime. But, you know, now you've got this competition with ESPN, Fox, DAZN. I mean, the whole landscape has changed, and these guys have massive budgets. I mean, that's the bottom line. And each of the platforms is structured differently. ESPN and DAZN are curated by, or not by, a network executive, mm-hmm, but by promoters themselves, mm-hmm, which I don't want to go into antitrust issues, but potentially some there.
Unusual. We'll just say it's interesting dynamic. It's an interesting dynamic.
Right, right. But, yeah, what difficulties or opportunities does that present to Showtime in terms of making big fights happen?
Well, you know, it remains to be seen, because we really haven't really engaged in it. I know, you know, that there are a couple promoters in particular who are very vocal about having tried to make big fights. You know, I go back to my standard rule of thumb in these. The more someone is talking about making a deal in public, the less they are actually trying to make a deal. So when guys go out there and say, well, it's easy to make deals cross-platform, you know, we'll just trade or we'll do this and that, that's great. But if that guy's not making any phone calls to make any of that happen, it is a PR spin. And I think they're speaking to an audience of one, and that's the fighter. And when you're trying to re-sign a fighter or keep a fighter happy, the fighter has to hear that you're going across platforms to get him opponents. He doesn't want to hear, I'm going to keep him within their own platform. So I think when you hear stuff like that, the question is, okay, is this being said publicly, or is it something that's actually, you know, being said publicly and the actions follow suit? And so, you know, from my perspective and knowing what I know about the fighters that we're involved in, no one's been approached about Mikey fighting cross-platform, you know, or Errol Spence, you know, fighting cross-platform. You know, it isn't. There's a lot of talk in the media, but no one's, you know, come to us and said, you know, let's try to do that. No one's gone to Al and said, here's an offer for Mikey or from that. You know, Eddie Hearn is, you know, very vocal out there. You know, I'm talking to this lawyer and he can get me to Al. I'm talking to this guy and he can get me to Al. I'm pretty sure there's one pretty direct line to Al. Exactly. To somebody. And you don't have to go through a lawyer in Mexico to get there. So if he wanted to make, you know, if he wanted to have real discussions about you know, Wilder versus Joshua, then I think you exhaust all the possibilities. So I think this is one of those cases where it's sort of like, I'm not sure yet. The next time that someone tries to make a sort of cross-platform deal will be the first time.
Absolutely. You know, and to go along with, you know, a lot of participants in the market now, the market's crowded, it's getting very competitive. The end of the year has been flooded with fights, mm-hmm. Which is usually a quiet period. I mean, you know, you've been quoted as saying boxing season is December to August. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, how do you see Showtime fitting into the market, like, beginning of the year when all four networks are up and running? I mean, I just see that it's going to be crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. And my real fear for the sport as a whole is that there's a watering down. You know, there's, you know, not every minor league baseball game deserves to be nationally televised. Maybe not any of them do. And, you know, I'm not, you know, calling, you know, anybody a minor league fighter. I'm just saying there are lower level fights or mid level fights. There are top tier fights. And I'm not sure that, you know, the casual fan or the non-fan knows the difference. So the danger is, particularly with these big platforms, is this is whatever you put forward is what the consumer views as your product. And it's the very informed consumer will say, okay, I know the difference between the level fights ESPN's putting on and the level fights that I've been seeing on Showtime. But that's really the hardcore fan who's really following closely and following names. I think the majority of fans, you know, boxing is boxing. And the danger is if you're showing them, you know, content, you know, just filler content. And I think, you know, my fear, and I'm not privy to ESPN's business model nor DAZN's, but my fear is that both of them needed tonnage. They needed hours to build a library, to build a streaming service. And boxing represented inexpensive tonnage, and there's not a curation of fights, there's not an appreciation of the sport, there's not a commitment to the sport. You know, what's going to happen? Where is ESPN Plus going to prioritize boxing when they have a flood of UFC events? I mean, I think that's going to be an interesting question. Once DAZN populates with, you know, other sports, what is their commitment to boxing? And I my fear is that not just are they harming the market in the short run by oversaturating and, you know, putting on a what are, you know, filler fights, I'm worried that, you know, eventually you're turning off a portion of the audience because they're not distinguishing. And then ultimately, as soon as they don't need boxing anymore, you know, they pull the rug out, right, and say, okay, we've got some baseball rights now, and we've got a little piece of, you know, cycling or whatever their business is going to be built on, then all of a sudden you find boxing finds itself used, you know, yet again, right, because it's inexpensive filler content, and that is not a long-term, not positive for boxing in the long term.
Right, right. And I guess also, you know, I mean, you've got more money in the sport. We're seeing some great fights. Mm-hmm. But again, it's really fractured now because you've got, you know, kind of three, you know, different camps. You know, obviously there's going to come a point you can't do just in-house fights. People are going to have to reach out. Mm-hmm. You know, you stated, I mean, you know, when it was just kind of HBO and Showtime going head-to-head that, you know, it was important for networks to kind of get a monopoly on weight classes because you need opponents for fights. You know, obviously it's going to be a lot more difficult to do that now with the fracturing of the camps.
Right. It's yet another strategy that I opened my big mouth about, and and DAZN decides, oh yeah, that'd be great. Let's pursue the 160 pounders.
Kind of just picking up what HBO left.
Right. Yeah. No, it's true. It was, I think it was more an opportunity than a strategy. I think, I think that's one way we can sort of divide the universe. And that's when we go back to the 70s when you had multiple over-the-air networks in doing it, that's they tended to sort of, whether it was a gentleman's agreement or whether it just worked out that way, you know, they were focused on different weight classes. So right. They really didn't step on each other's toes. And, you know, that's where, you know, Showtime sort of was when I started, you know, and they had the Super Six tournament. You know, they were doing lighter weight classes, you know, more of the European fights, a lot of the places where HBO wasn't.
Right, right.
And so that's one way. Now, when you've got four or five different participants, like that sliver of the pie, one-fifth of the pie probably isn't enough for anyone to subsist on. So it, you know, ultimately, you know, it's for the good of the sport and the good of the fighters, you're going to have to cross boundaries. And I think, you know, for example, I think, you know, Spence Garcia, a good example. You know, I'll be the first to say, look, that whatever I say applies to me as well. That's us putting our money where our mouth is. Mm-hmm. You know, Spence and, you know, Errol and Mikey are two guys who are core to our strategy, who have appeared, you know, over and over with us. I mean, Spence made his pro debut with us. You know, won his first title with us. Like, it's been a long relationship. But, you know, going back to your question about strategy, the reality is, as much as we love those guys, and we do love them, they're two of the top 5 pound for pound in the world, in my book. It's not good for Showtime subscribers to have that many pay-per-views,
right?
You know, in the century. That's 3 pay-per-views in 4 months.
Right.
And if we look at March in particular, March, there's only 3 good weekends because of the NCAA tournament.
Right.
So it's not like there's a lot of room to, you know, put a bunch of championship shows in between on Showtime and sprinkle them in so people are getting value as a subscription, as well as if you're interested by the pay-per-views. So that's one where, so we made the hard decision, you know, for both those guys, you know, if Fox can expand the audience and bring a different element and successfully do a pay-per-view, you know, more power to them. But, you know, after a December pay-per-view and January pay-per-view, as our decision, we sort of need to focus on programming the network.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. You mentioned the Super Six. You know, obviously, you know, Calip Sauerland was a participant in that and kind of said, wow, that was a great idea. You know, why don't we do this? So, he forms the World Boxing Super Series. But he doesn't have a monopoly on tournaments. And I was thinking, you know, I mean, I wrote an article. I know Chris read it. I don't know if you got a chance to look at it.
Yeah.
You know, it seems to me, you know, you have the biggest pool of talent.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly at 154 pounds, I mean, you could easily do like a tournament. And there's probably at least 2 or 3 divisions that Showtime, like every year, could probably like alternate, like do, you know, junior middleweights this year, welterweights next year, featherweights the year after. Is it something that you've thought about? I mean, to me, I looked at HBO's Superfly thing,
mm-hmm.
and kudos to Peter Nelson and Tom Loeffler for bringing mm-hmm. Superfly weights. And they showed there was interest in them, but there was interest in the first one. It was great. Mm-hmm. And the second one, yeah, there was mm-hmm. kind of some interest. And by the third one, the interest had waned. It's like, mm-hmm. if you'd done it as a tournament,
right.
mm-hmm. you would have built interest as opposed to had it waned. So is it something that Showtime would consider? I mean, obviously, you'd have to get the PBC on board,
mm-hmm.
and they've got obligations to Fox as well. But is it something you've considered?
I would consider. If we look at World Boxing Super Series and the Super Six, they both illustrate both the advantages and disadvantages. Super Six, everybody knows, it was too long, very ambitious, too long, and they didn't have a good solution for injuries.
Right, right.
World Boxing Super Series comes along and comes up with a way to address both. Much shorter, they, you know, stack their undercards with other weight classes, they have substitutes ready, the dates are firm. But here's the challenge. The challenge is, for the most part, you're not going to get your star fighters in there because they like to remain free to take, you know, What if Floyd Mayweather comes back, and you know, or what if Pacquiao? I have a chance, and I'm locked into this tournament. Pacquiao's
True.
Looking for an opponent.
Your commitment.
So it's sort of like you don't really get the star fighters unless it's the top fighters in a neglected division like cruiserweight. Sure. So you need a division where, you know, you have a good core of talent that's relatively young or relatively motivated to participate in the talent. You know, that's why I think the cruiserweights were a good choice for that perspective. But for US TV, you also need to sprinkle in Americans.
True.
And I think that's where cruiserweights was not a good choice, at least for US TV.
Sure.
So, you know, we did have extensive discussions with World Boxing Super Series. And the strategy for the initial year, at least the goal initially, was there would be one American heavy division and one European heavy division. And that way you'd have events on both sides of the Atlantic and you could sell to TV on both sides. It's one package, but you had something for everything. Well, the way it turned out, the first year had virtually no Americans.
Right.
And the second year, you know, virtually no Americans.
Right.
And now, I'm not saying we're only going to put Americans on the air, but, you know, there's, you know, it's been proven time and time again, you know, what is big in the rest of the world, you know, doesn't necessarily hold the Americans' interest.
Well, I think also with the Super Six, I think Showtime had a requirement that the semis and the finals be in the United States.
Right. And so... You know, if we can now navigate, I think the third iteration, I would say, let's take what we learned in those first two. In the third iteration, let's make it relatively, you know, relatively quick, have a solution for the injuries, and then find a weight class where you can get top-tier talent, you can lock them in, and you've got a variety of Latin American, American, British, UK, a good sprinkling across it, so it's appealing everywhere. Now, that's a lot to ask.
Featherweight.
that is one. And then, and we sort of, you know, and I've made the point, you said that sort of, in a sense, we're sort of doing a de facto tournament. It's not as structured and, you know, and it's immediately obvious as a true tournament. But, you know, when we do Thurman Garcia Porter, you know, Thurman Porter, Brooke Spence, you know, and ultimately, I do think now that Thurman is back in the mix, that Thurman Porter, you know, and Spence, assuming, you know, that is, if Spence keeps his belt against Mikey.
And assuming Porter beats Ugas.
You're right. So, look, I think, you know, those guys, it should not be difficult to unify with those guys.
Right.
I mean, they're mature in their careers. They're confident fighters. They certainly, you know, talk the game. So, you know, that won't be hard to get to that point.
Absolutely. Well, you've been really generous with your time, and I know I've probably run over, but let me get one more in here. I mean, just kind of more personal question. HBO is out of the picture. You're kind of the lone boxing TV exec out there. And do you consider yourself kind of a conscience of the sport, like Lou DiBella was? I mean, like I said at the upfronts, you were educating people about the sport, and it was like moving the ball forward for the greater good of the sport. Even though, like you said, it may have been detrimental, a little bit, you know. And boxing suffers from, you know, you've said it, it doesn't have a centralized mouthpiece for the industry. But I mean, do you consider yourself a conscience of the sport?
I think that's probably would be giving myself a little too much credit. I see where your question comes from, but I do think, I've been sort of raised in the sport. This isn't a job or just a job. This is something that, you know, in my household growing up, there were two sports. There was Dallas Cowboys football and boxing, you know, and I never thought I'd end up working in it, but it's something that has been near and dear, you know, since, you know, 7-8 years old, and it's I do care, and probably sometimes maybe take things a little bit too personally. I want to see the sport thrive, and I want to see. There's nothing that bothers me more when people repeat the all the old wives' tales and misconceptions. You know, boxing is dead. It's got an old demographic. It, you know, it's fading. It is a vibrant sport. It's a heroic sport. You know, it is. It attracts you know, the greatest range from Eastern Europeans to, you know, to Japanese fighters, to Latin American, to every type of American you can think of. And it's one of, now I know I'm sounding, you know, probably a little bit naive, it's one of the most egalitarian sports. You know, there's, you know, it's a very simple playing field, very simple rules. There's not teammates. You know, there's, and it doesn't matter how you got there, you get that opportunity. And you know, it's the Rocky story. So you know, I do think you know, as someone with a large degree of influence, you know, I was joking about, you know, being most powerful, but without question I have a good degree of influence. I think we do own you know, all of us here, I think it's Showtime, feel this way, and I do personally, we do owe the sport a duty of advancing it and expanding it. You know, we're not here to just suck the value out of it for the value of the network. You know, if we look at, you know, there's all kinds of ranges of opinions about Floyd Mayweather, about Oscar De La Hoya, but if you look at them as a societal experiment, and both came from really, really humble beginnings and have reached, like, untold wealth. I mean, wealth that most people will never even, you know, imagine, come in contact with. And it was simply through, you know, this sport. And I think there's something incredibly attractive about that. I mean, yes, it happens in other sports too, but, you know, this is a lone endeavor, and there's something heroic about, you know, you and your boxing gloves and your gym and you pulling yourself out of whatever situation you're in, whether it's physical, financial, emotional. There's something about the sport that is empowering and uplifting, and I think we want to honor that here.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, on that note, I really appreciate your time, Stephen, and thanks for being on the podcast. And that will do it for another edition of the Boxing Esquire podcast. I'd really like to thank Stephen Espinoza for taking the time out of a very busy schedule to speak with me. Also like to thank Chris de Blasio and Amanda Wong at Showtime for their patience in setting up the interview. If you like the podcast, please leave a comment or rating on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, SoundCloud, or wherever you access the Boxing Esquire podcast. Really appreciate it as it helps new listeners find the podcast. And until next time, so long, everybody.
Looking for
a good summer, finally, when your kids go to bed. Ugh, finally making a profit, finally a business bank doing something different, finally, like giving cash back on your business account. Introducing the new Santander 123 business current account. Finally, a proper reason to switch. Cash back up to £300 annually on credit turnover. Monthly fee £12.50 for UK-based companies with up to two directors, owners or partners. 18 plus T's and C's apply.